Good Catch General Store, catering for you, Samsung Canada, Foxwood Resort, Center Yoga, Urbane Cyclist, One Tooth Activewear, Adornments on Queen, TIFF, Carlton Cinemas, Mervish, and Medieval Times. With their support, they help make the spring membership drive a success. Go to www.ciut.fm to find out more information on our grand prize draws. The deadline is May 31st. CIUT 89.5 FM, the evolution continues.
Center Yoga. Diverse yoga for unique people. There are over 40 different yoga experiences and 70 classes scheduled each week. Center Yoga steps from U of T and Kensington Market at College and Spadina. Buy a Summer Sizzler membership for $199 for May 1st to August 31st. Details at omcenteryoga.com. AUMCENTERYOGA.com.
Ani, bonjour, tanse, sego, wache, and hello. Indigenous Waves is a celebration of Indigenous cultures, locally, nationally, and globally. Through music, storytelling, interviews, panel discussions, art, and humor, we explore the diversity of Indigenous peoples. Indigenous Waves can be heard here on CIUT every Monday from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can always catch our podcasts at indigenouswaves.com. Follow us on Twitter at Indigenous Waves to stay up to date with Indigenous Waves here on CIUT 89.5 FM.
The evolution continues. CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
Hey,
hello.
Vibe Collective CIUT having some technical difficulties.
I'm telling you, it's me.
It's not you. We had some stuff when you were gone.
Yeah.
So, I'll tell you who it is.
Vibe Collective CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Jams, and welcome back.
Mally, a.k.a. Docu Vixen, is back. I don't know how I'm feeling about it yet.
We're glad to have you back.
We're glad you're back. Even though you did bring the rain, it was like,
Again, apparently technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties. I'm your co-host, Adrian Worrell.
I'm Kemba King. Where's the rum?
Flying
fish.
You know
pepper
saying?
Sauce.
Where's on the pepper
point.
Sauce?
We're talking about food here.
Seriously.
I didn't bring it today, yes. There will be some, though.
So we're the Vibe Collective. We're heard every Saturday from 3 to 5. From 3 to 4, we have roundtable discussions. Yeah. We talk about social justice issues, decolonization, environmental
racism, and justice.
Yeah.
And then from 4 to 5, the DJs bring you music to move you. Hopefully, we'll be able to do that today because we are having some technical difficulties.
The computer, if you're used to hearing our intro, the computer seems to be not connecting.
It's a vibe.
Bad. Yeah. Try to sing it.
So we are having technical difficulties, but that's okay. We'll still continue to do the show. What do we have lined up for today? In addition to, we need to do a little catch-up recap with Melinda from her Caribbean travels. But then we also have...
Yeah, we're going to have Jill Andrew and Aisha Firecloud, who are going to come and talk to us about their work with Dare Magazine and Fat in the City and Bite Me, which is... an art and film festival celebrating fatness and body image. So they will be joining us shortly.
Yeah.
Cool. I love talking about those issues.
So do I.
Yeah.
Cool.
So you were off in Trinidad, Melinda.
Yes, Trinidad.
A.k.a. Docu Vixen.
I was in Trinidad for exactly 5 weeks. And it was kind of a whirlwind. I was working on two films with Frances Ann Solomon. And yes, we do two films at once. Why do one, right? So one was called Hero, and it is a documentary about Ulrich Cross, who's a national hero of sorts in Trinidad, but no one really knows about him. And his story is that he was in the RAF during the war, and he's a decorated veteran. And out of the war, he came out, like a lot of people from the colonies, then became involved in the anti-colonial struggles after World War II, and was then instrumental in setting up independent Trinidad, along with was a advisor to Nkrumah, and involved in Ghana, Tanzania, Cameroon. So we were basically shooting one portion of the documentary. We were doing the dramatizations of his childhood in Trinidad. So, and then we were doing also a short film, and it was called Breakout, and it's about two young girls and their experience, and they grew up in a home, but then they break out, and it's about their journey throughout Trinidad and basically the choices that they have to make. And it's also about how young girls make the choice to go into sex work. So that's the short film. Which we'll see what happens. That might become a feature. We don't know. So hopefully. So yeah. So it was a whirlwind. Met with a lot of cool people. It was a crew. It was a small crew, but more than I'm used to. So I was excited to That's work awesome. And collaborate with other people. There's a lot of exciting things happening in Trinidad around film. A lot of young filmmakers. It's working awesome. So I met a lot of really, really awesome people. Port of Spain, I've never really been there, so that was interesting. It's a very different experience than Barbados, so I was excited to be there and be able to spend time. And then I went to Barbados and sat on the beach for a week. And visited family.
Sounds nice.
So, yeah.
Had you never been to Trinidad before? Because you made it seem like you hadn't been to Port of Spain, but had you been to Trinidad altogether?
No, okay. I've been to Trinidad via, you know, stay in the airport, move on kind of thing, stay over. Okay. But I've never really, I've never been to Trinidad. And for those who don't know, what the original name of Trinidad, I was told, is called Lair in the Arawak language, and it means land of the hummingbird.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
God. I have to give back my card. I have to give back my card. How do you spell Lair?
It's L-E-R-E, and there's like an accent on it. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation.
But that sounds good.
Lair, I was thinking.
Yeah, so we just have, our guests are just arriving.
Yay, and they made it in the crazy the CTC madness right now.
Madness. Yes. It took me 45 minutes to get from Yonge and St. Clair down here today.
Well, because it's a shuttle right now, right?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it was pure, I was cursing the TTC all the way down.
You could have probably walked.
I think it would have been faster to walk.
Yeah, I remember one week I thought you had walked.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I should have. So, welcome. Welcome to the Vibe Collective.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for joining us. Oh, you can probably just turn the volume up right there.
Yeah, probably turn it up, yeah. You just turn it up. Yep, there you go. Hello, can you hear? Yeah. All right, cool. Awesome. Test one.
All right. This is like everybody the analog headphones. Show. You think this is our first show ever. We've meanwhile been on the air for like 7.5-8 years. So
want to welcome both of you. Oh, wow. Okay. Want to welcome both of you to the Vibe Collective. Really excited to talk about issues around fat activism. Looking at your bios, you both have a lot of titles, but I guess maybe just for the way in which you want to be introduced today. Maybe Aisha, you can start, and then Jill.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you for following Fat in the City.
Yeah.
So I am one of the co-founders of Fat in the City,
mm-hmm.
and I'm also a lovely TV reality doc producer.
Nice. Thank yes. you.
And thank you for having me. I'm Jill Andrew, co-founder of Fat in the City and festival founder director of Bite Me, Toronto International yes. Body Image Film and Arts Festival, of which Aisha is programming director, and all-around grad student and lover of fashion, politics, and activism. Mm.
As well as cats.
Yes, as well as cats.
Cats. Exciting. I want to jump right into it. I think that looking at Dare Magazine, looking at Fat in the City, looking at the work around Bite Me, I think the work that I see in that it is multi-layered. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I appreciate. Like, when I looked at Dare Magazine this week when it was posted, I was like, oh, they're actually fat. You know, or they're actually plus size, right? Like there's times where my mother or my friends and I have, like, closed one eye and we're like, that's plus size? Like, that.
Yes, yes.
So I want to know. jump right in. Yeah, right?
Yeah, no, I think so many times we look at magazines mm-hmm. and we'll see a plus model and we'll think, wow, you're a size 8, mm-hmm. you're a size 10, you're mm-hmm. a size 12. And for a lot of people, that's not really plus size.
Right.
So it's important to see plus size. And I understand that, you know, whatever plus size is also a discussion. What does
yes.
it mean? What size is plus size? Are you plus if you're 12, if you're 14, if yeah. you're 16, if you're 18? So it's important, and it's good to see that we're seeing reflections of what, you know, all women look
right.
like.
Definitely.
And what I would say, I think Dare Magazine is certainly making a stand mm-hmm. in that they are saying, look at us. We mm-hmm. have roles. Our stomachs are not airbrushed,
mm-hmm.
you know. However, I would say as well, too, for Dare and any other publication, we do have to recognize that bodies don't stop at 18s
yes.
or 20s. I mean, I'm yeah. comfortable in a place where I'm an 18, 20, 16, 14 mm-hmm. W according mm-hmm. to the designer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we also have allies within fat activism, within fat fashion activism, mm-hmm. who are 24 plus.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily see themselves represented even within the plus size market.
Right.
So I think what Aisha was touching on in the whole, you know, the politic around the language of plus
yes.
needs to be addressed. And then we also have to question, you know, do we need, is plus size magazines, is that really the moment of representation and inclusion that we want? Or is it more so about having fat bodies, because I really don't like the word plus size, although mm-hmm. I use it sometimes. Is it about having fat bodies, othered bodies, just there, mm-hmm. included, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not ghettoized, it doesn't become a special issue of the month, or it doesn't
yeah.
become this heroic magazine like
yeah.
Dare or Grand,
yeah.
which preceded it way back in 2004, 3,
yeah.
you know. Where, what exactly is inclusion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely relevant. I remember I was in the States and I went to a plus size store mm-hmm. and I saw size up to the size of 30, which I had never
seen that myself.
It was amazing, mm-hmm. right? But I guess where I was leading with that question mm-hmm. is, how did both of you become involved or have a desire to talk about it in this very mm-hmm. progressive way?
I can start by saying I was always a child who was policed mm-hmm. by various family members. You know, Jilly, you sure you want that extra piece of whatever it was, fill in the blank? So I always knew that there was something wrong with being bigger mm. or being taller, as
right.
I was often the tallest girl in the class or whatever mm. the case was. So I started kind of realizing that, you know, this is wrong, you know, I need to lose weight. I was a child, I remember being maybe 12 or so, breaking into my mom's, that pink nasty strawberry Weight Watcher shake or whatever it was. So I always had this hypersensitive awareness
mm-hmm.
of my body. But there was a particular experience I had. I was probably 15 at the time, where this gentleman on the bus, he came on, long story short, big dog. I was very terrified. I'm sitting there in this beautiful blue, thin-strapped Le Chateau spaghetti dress fitted with my rolls, but having a good day
mm-hmm.
with my girlfriend Keisha, you know, and this man, he just started spewing profanities. Profanities, you know, if you weren't such an effing fat black B-I-T-C-H, wow. You wouldn't be afraid of my dog. I mean, it's just a huge story. And that, for me, was a moment where I was both angered, I was both embarrassed, and I knew I had to do something. And literally, I mean, even at that young age, shortly thereafter, my friends and I started talking about, you know, being a girl and, you know, not being able to find all of our sizes at Le Chateau and little things like yeah. that. And I mean, you know, throwing forward 15 odd years.
Yeah.
You know, I happen to see Aisha go through similar situations mm-hmm. on the TTC, and then I talk to other friends who have gone through similar situations. So I feel that my desire to speak about size and about weight and about shape, it's not just fashion related, obviously. It's about the medical profession. It's about the mm-hmm. workplace. It's about bullying issues at school. It's about structural issues, seeing people be ridiculed, mm-hmm. you know, dare I say, by clothed professionals mm-hmm. in TTC areas where they can't fit through the turnstile. Yeah. There's so many things yeah. visually, viscerally, that just make me connected to the work.
Right.
Yeah.
Aisha, can you share?
Yeah, I have a similar story to Jill in that my family kind of always policed my weight. It was a little running joke, mm-hmm. You know, amongst aunts that were also plus size, mm-hmm. but, you know, family dinners, oh, Aisha, don't eat that, or, you know, mm-hmm. little touch of the bottom, oh, it's getting bigger. So it was something where I learned to work out mm-hmm. to maintain my size yeah. so that I wouldn't have to hear any attacks from my family. And, you know, over the years, you know, guess what? We gain weight. And I started to stay away from my family's cousins mm. so that I didn't have to hear them
wow.
police me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I met Jill. And she has curvy catwalk. We were starting Bite Me together. Mm-hmm. And I began to accept my body and love it and accept my size. And in terms of clothing and in Fat and City, we started it to help women see that they can be fashionable regardless of their size, to show fat women yeah. that there are more than just the muumuu mm-hmm. that we wear, that despite the fact that we mm-hmm. don't see ourselves in magazines and often on TV, and when you do, you see what you look like. You're the best friend. You're lazy. You're really, really funny.
Yes.
But you are mm. definitely not fashionable.
Or
especially
sexual.
Especially as black women, being mm-hmm.
right.
the fat black woman who's funny mm-hmm. and hilarious mm-hmm. or overly sarcastic, mm-hmm. right? So I think
angry
that's some,
at the world.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that, sorry.
Yeah, oh, no, no. So, you know, Fat in the City was started to help women embrace their curves, show that we can be fat and fashionable and that we can have a voice. So it's not just fashion. Yeah. It's also talking about social issues.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a celebration within Fat in the City. Like, because, okay, I'm not always so savvy, so all I was looking at was the pictures at first. I'm like, oh, you have to double click on it, and then there's the words, right? So, I know, awkward. But I really want to talk about Curvy Catwalk and Fat in the City in detail, but can you just maybe each of you just define for our listening audience what fat activism is and what mm. fat shaming is? Because mm. I think for me growing up, like, I didn't have it in my immediate family, I will say that, but, like, you know, when you're around Caribbean family members, when I was around Caribbean family members, there's this kind of matter-of-fact way of talking,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And understanding what was actually observation versus telling you that you are fat, like, mm-hmm. sometimes mm-hmm. it was like, you're saying yeah. something very matter-of-factly. I don't feel like you're attacking me, You're just stating what you see.
That right? that reminds me of when I put on this great dress, mm-hmm. great dress, and my mom looked at me and said, "Oh, Aisha, you look so pretty, but you look even prettier if you didn't show your belly." Mm. But she didn't say it as an insult,
right? It was just
yeah,
the way it was.
May I jump in and say I think here is the deciding thing here. If you've told auntie whoever
yes.
or mommy or daddy or whoever that I don't appreciate
yeah.
you know, the recommendations and observations and evaluations of my body
yeah.
and they maintain those evaluations, observations and recommendations, then I certainly believe that it's fat shaming.
Mm.
And I do believe that they are, you know, adding insult. However, you're right. I mean, there is something to be said about an intergenerational understanding
mm-hmm.
of fat activism and fat politics and all of this jazz. And yeah, you're right. If someone says, oh boy, you look so nice, that little belly, you know, maybe they're just speaking of what they see.
Mm-hmm.
But then it really is, you know, up to us as well to be able to speak up and out, you know, even if it does take time to get that courage. And then we can say, well, you know, Uncle so-and-so is not respecting our rights mm-hmm. of how we want to discuss our bodies or choose not to discuss our bodies. Okay. But back to your question on fat activism, you know, Belle and I... Oh, my goodness. Aisha and I, that's a pet name. Aisha and I speak all the time about, well, what is fat activism? Are you a fat activist? Well, you're not as much a fat activist as you should be, and all this back and forth. And I think there's something in that. There is a spectrum, I'd like to say, a continuum of fat activism. One could say similar threads would run in feminism, or one could say similar threads might run in being a black feminist, which I also identify myself as. But for this conversation, I think fat activism is about looking at the way culture views fat and fatness, looking at the way culture, you know, tries to denounce, threaten, exclude fatness. You know, looking at what meanings get placed on fatness is really what a fat activist does. And so what do we actually do? We speak out, we act out, we write, we sing, we dance, we create policy, we educate around this issue of making fat bodies more present, not apologizing for fat bodies, and trying to change whatever systems we can to be more, not accepting, but to be more aware that fat bodies are there and that we deserve rights for human rights and rights to jobs and rights to workplaces and rights to clothing, you know?
Definitely. So, I was wondering what you might have noticed cross-culturally. Mm-hmm. You said how the way that the culture, but of course we're multicultural and we're, you know, just diverse. So what differences have you noticed across cultures, be it Caribbean or South Asian, East Asian, European, with regards to body size and how, you know, different looks are appreciated?
Without slipping into like a culturally relativist sort of a, well, you know, black women love this, South Asian women love that, I guess what I would say is there's this popular assumption that, you know, oh, black women, you know, we're just fine with our fat bodies. We don't mind. The men don't mind. Also within a very heterosexual context, you know, black people just in general, we don't mind having a few flabs, a few rolls, whatever the case might be. But I would say that that is, you know, very limiting in that it kind of suggests that we are somehow not living in the society that every other woman is living in. And the more I've spoken to black women and spoken to black young women, and even men too, there's a certain type of fat that's glorified in the African, Canadian, African, Caribbean, you know, communities. So it's not this notion of fat acceptance and fat liberation, you know, I think as a fat activist might dream society to come to, but it's a place of the right fat.
I think it's the right curves.
The right curves. And maybe even over-sexualizing those right curves to an extent, right? Whereas on the flip side, it's kind of like the white woman's fears, you know, it's all about anorexia and bulimia and, you know, they don't like size at all. When in fact, there are some white females that I've interviewed who very much enjoy their size and enjoy their curves and want to be seen and represented. So I just think it's easy to fall into that categorizing, but it's not that clear either, you know?
You were asking about, you know, what fat shaming and fat activism. For myself, I like to call myself a fat fashion activist.
Yes.
Which is, you know, about celebrating all sizes, about letting all women know that they're beautiful and there are options. Mm-hmm. There are options despite what you see. Now, you have to look for them. You're not going to be able to walk into, you know, Eaton Center and find those options. You might not be able to walk into the Bay. You have to look online, which is also an issue that oftentimes, I mean, we all love shopping online, but when shopping online is your only option, it's definitely not fair, and it's definitely an isolating experience where, you know, if somebody is a size 24 and they want to have a shopping spree, guess what they do? They go online and they click, and then they pay, you know, a ton of amount for shipping and for taxes. So an item that might be on sale for, let's say, $70, by the time you pay shipping, taxes, duty, you've now paid $140. And now you have to wait 2 weeks for your item. So guess what? If you have a party on Friday, you're screwed.
And you still don't know how that's going to exactly fit.
You don't know how it's so you don't know how it's going to fit. So a lot of women, what they've done is they'll go to blogs and see if, you know, my favorite blogger has bought this item. So at least I can see what it looks like on my body.
Wow.
Because what's funny is that despite the fact that you are shopping at an online plus store, sometimes the models might be a size 12 or a size 8. I've literally seen clothes that are that go up to size, you know, 24, 28, and I look at the model and the model is a size 6, which, you know, it was obviously very frustrating,
frustrating.
Right. And then when you talk about fat shaming, you know, you watch TV and you'll watch a stylist who's going to talk about plus fashion. I've seen that. And it really drives me crazy because when you hear them say, oh, if you have the right curves or, you know, wear the bathing suit for this shape. Well, what if you don't have that shape?
Mm-hmm.
You know, wear ruching. Ruching hides your stomach. What if you can't hide your stomach?
Or don't want to.
Exactly. So really what they're saying is don't wear that. Yeah. And this is what, you know, millions of women hear every day.
Yeah.
I just want to get back to the point about, you know, the sizes that are not available in stores. I know there's that popular store, Urban Behavior, I think it's called. They only go up to size 6. I've heard that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, you see, I wouldn't know about Urban Behavior because I can't walk into Urban Behavior. But I mean, certainly, you know, your Club Monaco's, your higher end, Holt Renfrew's even. It doesn't really matter where you go in unless you're going into Additionnel or you're going into Tony Plus. And just a little correction, yes, the Bay does have an above average section. But you know, what often happens when you're that fabulous plus fat fashionista is you end up walking into the event and guess what? We've all got the same suit on or the same dress on. So it's really about the need to have options, right? And to be able to mix and match and have fun. I mean, there are a lot of researchers out there who have researched the shopping experience. And something is lost socially and emotionally, your ability to connect with friends and have a girl's day out shopping. Something's lost when you're stuck on the bed clicking.
So that's what I wanted to ask in terms of, fat activism for people who are not familiar with what that might look like. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things that a fat activist might engage in to try and address these issues?
Well, I can say, I mean, some of the things that we've been engaged in, for instance, let's take it to a classroom situation. We're trying to get size, weight, and shape discrimination included into the Human Rights Code, at least within the Toronto District School Board's Human Rights Department. So that's the sort of a tangible action that a fat activist, or quite frankly, an anti-oppression activist, or a queer theorist activist, or a black feminist activist. I mean, I guess I want to show that they're intersectional, and you often find that a person who cares about one area will also understand the politic and practice of another, right? So it's not only a fat activist doing the work, but something like trying to change policy, for instance. I mean, our own Human Rights Code. I mean, we don't have any protection around weight discrimination right here in Canada. I mean, many places don't. Another form of activism might be writing open letters. You know, writing letters to designers, trying to demand that we're seen. Another form of activism within the fashion realm has been fashion swaps. You know, it's really about women coming together, you know, exchanging clothing, exchanging stories, exchanging strategies, quite frankly, for surviving the shopping experience. When you walk in and, you know, sometimes the salesperson, you know, gives you that, you know, well, we don't think we'll have something to fit your body here, get out sort of a look. You know, or you're immediately ushered to the black items because, of course, black is slimming. And who wants to wear white or who wants to wear, you know, yellow or pink or anything like that, right? So I think those are some examples. We certainly have had the historical examples of, people like Pretty Porky and Pissed Off, you know, walking down the street, bikini wearing, whatnot wearing, fat clothes, tight clothes wearing, saying, look at our fat bodies. But there's all kinds of activisms. You know, there's that. But there's also stuff like Curvy Catwalk, you know, where it was about having fat bodies and skinny bodies. You know, I made sure it wasn't a fat fashion show. It was having several types of bodies on that floor.
Can you just get into the work of Curvy Catwalk?
Yes.
And I also want to talk about, you know, the reference of your work being social experiments. Why that, so maybe you can talk about Curvy Catwalk, and Aisha, you can talk about the social experiment aspect of it.
So Curvy Catwalk started in 2006. Oh my gosh. Wow, time flies. And basically what it was, you know, we hadn't seen at least we weren't aware, and we were actually dubbed the first ever Toronto Plus Fashion fundraiser. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to put regular women, there were no models, professional models that is, on the catwalk, and they were of different sizes. We happened to have people that also represented different sexualities, different ages were also on the catwalk. And we just wore clothes. Some of the clothes came from our wardrobe. Some of the clothes came from companies who were interested in what we were doing and didn't mind loaning them. And we had this fashion fundraiser. And partial proceeds went to Netic, the National Eating Disorder Information Center. And some proceeds went to Sheena's Place. And it's an event that we have kind of cropped up at different times. I wouldn't say it's happened every year because it hasn't. But it happened in 2008, after that, 9, and then 11, actually. We teamed up with the Bob Rumbel Center for the Deaf, and we had deaf models, plus size models, deaf plus size models, and we did this great fashion show at 401 Richmond, and it was amazing. Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, let me just jump in here, because we do have to take a very, very brief break. And when we come back, I do want to hear...
Okay.
Yes. So you're listening to The Vibe Collective. We are speaking with Jill Andrews and Aisha Fairclough.
Yes.
And we'll be back after this very brief message here on The Vibe Collective, CIUT 89.5 FM.
The evolution continues. CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
And we're back here on The Vibe Collective, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I'm just going to turn on the mic.
Sorry.
Y'all were engaged in a conversation. So
it is a really
I didn't want to throw it up on air.
That always happens.
Yes, yeah. It does always happen. So you're listening to The Vibe Collective. I am Jams.
It's Adrian Worrell.
Mally, a.k.a. Docu Vixen.
And
it's your girl, Meme.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Inside joke, but good name.
Yeah.
Yes. And we are speaking with Jill Andrews and Aisha Fairclough. And we're talking about body image and fat activism and fat shaming and fashion. And Aisha, you were about to address...
the social experiment vision of your work,
right,
and why you name it as being a social experiment.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we are calling it a social experiment because, you know, calling yourself fat can be very radical.
Mm.
It can definitely disrupt spaces. In fact, we've come across many people that have been very uncomfortable, that are still uncomfortable with the word fat.
Mm.
I've had friends that have questioned me and said, why are you calling yourself fat?
Yeah.
You're being self-loathing. Oh, that's insulting. Yeah. Don't call yourself fat. So it's one of those things where when you call yourself fat, you are making a statement.
Mm.
And it definitely has been interesting to see what other people, how other people react to us.
Mm.
You know, I have a friend that says, I still can't say fat.
Wow.
Because I look at it like an insult. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm sorry. I'll call you curvy. Mm-hmm. I'll call you plus,
mm-hmm,
but I definitely won't call you fat. Mm-hmm. So, you know, choosing to call the blog Fat in the City is to, you know, try and take back the word that a lot of people see as very hurtful.
Right.
We all know what fat people are not fashionable. Mm. And they're definitely funny, but they're lazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's being able to kind of reclaim that word.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we use that. And then we're also talking about fat shaming. I just wanted to go, mm-hmm, back to that. As, mm-hmm, we know, you know, it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When,
you'll pick up flair, or you're on Twitter and you're following a certain editor, and how to dress for your size. Mm-hmm. You know, the 100 calories. Mm-hmm. You know, you see these things all the time. In fact, the Weight Watchers commercial with Jennifer Hudson that says you've got the power literally drives me crazy every single day, where I want to throw something at the television, because it's these constant messages that we're just bombarded by, that we're not good enough, that you always have to fix yourself.
Yeah,
and put yourself into, you know, somebody else's box.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to say this, I've got the power. I mean, you know, I'm from the generation, so, you know, we know the Snap CNC Music Factory, all the debacle of who got to sing what, and, you know, taking the fat woman out and putting the skinny woman in the video, all of that politic, right? But I mean, something bigger than that, too, is this feminist consumerism that kind of surrounds weight loss and buying the certain perfume and buying those designer shades. And they say something like, I've got the power, which somehow it's trying to echo feminist words, feminist ideas. But what it's really doing is it's equating power with being thin.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I know there's a Chanel ad that I had taken pictures that I use in talks. And it says, you know, your freedom is there, embrace it. Yeah. And it's a naked woman hugging a Chanel perfume bottle.
Wow.
I mean, what freedom is that?
Yeah.
But it's this notion of how do we manipulate women, right?
Mm-hmm.
By using these very feminist, catchy empowerment phrases that really aren't saying anything about empowerment. It's manipulation to buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's feminist consumerism, right? Mm-hmm. It's
upsetting. I think
that, I want to just, you know, bring up your Dove Real Beauty campaign. I have that skill.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Thank you.
Adrian's also our resident feminist. So,
I know.
Yes.
I'm getting card sprinted there.
Okay.
And you must put resident feminist.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Not in brackets, neither, like gold. Like.
Well, you know, with Dove has helped some women, you know, increase their self-esteem. But, you know, we have to remember that, you know, it's Dove. And they're selling an image, and they're telling us it's feminine feminist consumerism, and they're telling us, you know, buy our soap and you'll look good and you'll feel good. You know, when they have the recent Dove the sketches, and, you know, these women, how do you look? Oh, I look terrible. And it's touching, but you have to remember that this is a business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what women did they pick?
Yeah.
How did they pick these women?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they also to contrast, it's the same company that owns Axe.
Yeah.
and it was all white women
that's true.
In that ad.
Right, and in India, Unilever, right?
Skin bleaching!
Another show. Yeah.
But talking about intersections, it's really important to know that and know who these companies are and know what they're doing and know what they're doing to the environment as well as to people.
Yeah. And a piece about the sketch campaign, I mean, you know, and it's tricky, because I had friends really challenged, because I wrote an open letter as well that kind of circulated, where I spoke about Dove, and I spoke to my understanding of how I felt it was a bit of a co-opt sort of a, you know, advertising strategy. The reality is, Dove is helping, you know, their campaigns, their educational tools. Some of the advisors working with Dove are some body image experts that I personally revere. I know for a fact that they are helping some. So I'm not suggesting that a corporation can't roll their sleeves up. But what I'm suggesting is there has to be transparency.
Mm.
So let us know that, you know, this campaign that's going to make us feel great is also going to take money out of our pockets. Let us know that. Let us also know that, you know, here in Canada, we're telling you love your body, including your roles, but, you know, that little place over there in South Africa, well, we're also selling skin bleaching. Let us know what's going on so that we can make an informed decision and be critical citizens, right, in that sense. And let's not sell this notion that every girl is sad and needs fixing, which is what the commercial essentially sold, right?
But my question is, like, when is an ad campaign not a manipulation? Like, you know what I mean? Like, when is it not trying to make you feel bad so that you would buy something?
That's
the nature of advertising.
That, and we're, you know what? I actually, I remember reading something recently where it said, is it commercial or ads responsibility to increase our self-esteem?
Mm.
And I was thinking about that, so that kind of goes along with your question. I mean, you're right, they're all a manipulation, but there's just something a little extra about one that is, you know, I mean, let's face it, Chanel, Gucci, Prada, whatever, they're selling an exclusivity. They're selling a covert message. But don't come up and try and tell me about loving myself and self-esteem women are the leaders of the future, but not connect it with your Dove and not connect it with your soap and your lotion. Like, you know.
Right. Would you...
I'm saying it's just the mining of vulnerable or perceived vulnerable population. Like, you know, again, with the other companies you... named, it's clearly this kind of exclusionary, exclusive thing. But here it's kind of like we're trying to draw people in based on a perceived weakness they might have.
Yes.
And I think that's another level.
Right.
I just want to put this out there and maybe we can come back to it later. But, you know, I frequent the gym. And, like, you see men with body image stuff as well.
Completely.
Deeply. And, like, one of the jokes of the gym is like, oh, that guy has bigorexia. Right? Where... this dude is swole, like he's huge, but like when he looks in the mirror, he sees like a 99-pound, you know, weak, quote unquote 99-pound weakling looking back at him. And the idea that there's also an acknowledgement that body dysmorphia, but you know, it's gym, so we don't use those big words, right? We don't use school words in the gym. Bigorexia, right?
Gosh.
So is that, and also the more traditional where you have you know, fat men who. You know, they're fit, but because their bodies don't conform to this particular look that you'll see on like Men's Cosmo, Men's Health magazine, etc., you have a lot of the similar issues coming up, and we're seeing that with steroid use or whatever, you know, whatever else. So maybe we could speak on that as well.
Do you want me to start? Or do you want to start?
You know, when you talk about men with body image issues, I can think of. Family members that are male, I won't say their names because they probably know who they are, who have gained weight, and I'll never forget a scream. Oh my God, my jeans don't fit. And I almost fell on the floor because I'd never heard that before. I'd never heard that before from a man. And, you know, still constantly policing the body, and I'm going to... PX, what is it, PX?
P90X.
Yeah, P90X, and, you know, making all these meals, and just constantly policing. So definitely, males do have body image issues. They don't talk about it, and what we do, when they do, we kind of make light of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you also think of, you know, male and body image, I thought of Rick Ross. I thought of his freedom, you know, to walk around with his shirt off, and it's he's seen as big and he's powerful and he's masculine. Whereas, if a woman did that, that probably wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I still think he still gets. I think there's still fat shaming that happens to him on to a lesser degree, but I still think that in terms of an imbalance, that is still true. Because
right.
I've heard people talk about his breasts.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. One of the other things I wanted to bring into the conversation is just, you know, I think body shaming doesn't always happen via, you know, fat shaming. It could be, you know, you don't have the right type of body, you don't have the right curves in this place or that place, especially as females, you know, we're expected to have a certain proportion. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, for example, like I've had a baby, I have a baby belly, you know, and only surgery will take that away.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so... I guess what I'm getting at here is I think there's the spectrum, like you were saying before, there is the spectrum of bodies that, you know, through media, because of the power of media is so powerful, you know, advertising is so powerful, and not just media, but, you know, I think the evolution of the internet and what that's brought in terms of like access to porn and access to, you know, the images that, you know, mainstream people seem to find attractive, but it's always this very narrow perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So where in this spectrum do we look at other body types, and how do we negotiate, I guess, these conversations and look at, you know, the diversity of bodies out there? Because it's not just about fat and skinny, right?
No,
there's,
of course
there's
not.
There's so many different types of bodies.
It's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. I mean, I think you know, there's your be yourself activist, right? There's that kind of a terminology going around as well. And I think that might be where your question fits. Maybe you're not a fat activist. Maybe you're not 95 pounds and healthy, right? But at least if we can start a dialogue around not looking at so much what bodies look like, but looking at what bodies do, you know, how bodies survive, you know what I mean? Like seeing the body as a subject, you know, as an active thing, you know, as something necessary to live versus seeing it as this appendage, like this sort of a, well, if it doesn't look good today, I'm not leaving the house. You know what I mean? Maybe that's somewhere that we can start having dialogues that aren't as threatening. Because, you know, sometimes you say fat activist and it's like, whoa, like I've been at conferences and I usually throw it out there. I'm a fat activist, black feminist fat activist. You know, and it, you know, you'll have the person come up after. So, are you saying then that people shouldn't lose weight? Oh, no. This is not what fat activism is about. It's about how people are treated because of their weight, shape and size, right? So I think that's a space that we could start. You know, the be yourself type of activism as well.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think the be yourself activism is important. I think it's about recognizing that, I hate to say the word beauty, but there is beauty, you know, in all the sizes. There's a spectrum, mm-hmm. You know? I know we were saying plus can be a 12, but for somebody, there can be women that, you know, you had a baby and now you're size 12. And you are negotiating being in your new body, mm-hmm. And that's okay. And it's about being respectful, mm-hmm. And knowing how to address all people and not shaming somebody.
Right.
And it's one of those things that are kind of ingrained to us, that we don't even realize, mm-hmm. We're shaming somebody, you know. You might tell somebody that is whatever size, 18, 20, 22, you have such a pretty face. And there's nothing wrong with saying you have a pretty face, but I think people have to be cognizant is that when you're telling somebody they have such a pretty face, you're being very specific.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you're not realizing that they might be thinking, okay, so are you saying my body isn't beautiful? Because mm-hmm. You're telling me that I have such a pretty face.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I just think that it's important to think about the language that we're using so that it can be more of an inclusive conversation, mm-hmm. And to be more respectful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's tricky because here we are sitting, I mean, body image is, you know, this whole talk about fat activism, body acceptance is huge for me. Like, I mean, I've been studying this, practicing this, writing this, acting this my life, pretty much. Well, my adolescent to adult life. But at the same time, you know, we don't want to lose sight either that women and girls, you know, have much bigger fish to fry as well, outside of finding the perfect dress for the Saturday night party. Like, I mean, so we don't, it's a tricky, there's a catch 22, right, of making clothing and being beautiful in Dove ads our main priority when we still have, you know, violence to look at. We still have disparaging socioeconomic issues of poverty to look at. You know, we still have issues of where women are located in government, in positions of policy and creation. So, you know, it's how do we find that balance where, and this is a thing with Dove. I mean, Dove is great in that it's self-esteem, it's beauty, it's important. I mean, people that like to say, well, it's what's inside that counts, I say, good for you. You know, walk outside every day with your insides alone showing. Mm-hmm. Not happening. There's social capital, right? There's an actual gain, a tangible gain to having certain looks. But I, you know, maybe Dove and other companies will start pushing towards the economic conversation and the conversation around women's professions. And again, what bodies do versus just what they look like.
But I feel like I'm not going to necessarily look to companies, big pharma companies, mm-hmm. which I'll just lump them all together. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm going to look to like blogs like Fat in the City and Living Large and In Charge, right? Because mm-hmm. you're going to intersect different mm-hmm. things. Like, you know, your blog on getting older, like it's mm-hmm. just, it didn't necessarily just have to be about what it means to be a fat woman. So I think we have to look, this is a part of the local discussion. I know mm-hmm. blogs are very much like worldwide, but like in terms of local, mm-hmm. the small person kind of discussions is where we need to look for those intersectionalities, I think. I don't know, I've also been very oblivious to ads for most of my life. Like I had a friend who was a model. She'd be like, we just walked by me. And I missed it, right? So I think sometimes, like, we have to appreciate the local, and mm-hmm. if people get things out of the big stuff, then that's great too.
I think the wonderful things, the wonderful thing about blogs is that, you know, you can see yourself.
Yeah.
And for me, it was, I was always behind the scenes, so to put up my first picture of myself and to write about myself was amazing. And then to have feedback, the first person that gave me feedback, she actually lives in Germany.
Wow. Yeah,
she lives in Germany, and there's a couple people that have been writing to me from Portugal and Spain, and to hear that we have different but similar stories. Mm-hmm. And it's important to be able to, you know what, you might not find yourself online, but you can find, you not online, you can find yourself in magazines, but you can find yourself online.
Definitely.
My question is, I was thinking about, the idea of sizes, right? And the fact that, certain sizes are categorized. And I was just thinking, how sizes are is a product of, clothing industry, right? Because it needs to be marketed to certain people, blah, blah, blah. But, there was a time where there was no sizes. You just got measurements, right?
Yeah.
Like, you had a tailor, they measured you, and they made clothes.
Right.
So I don't know, maybe that's something to look at. Like, maybe that's something that we need to go back to. Or, the idea of there's no sizes. Mm-hmm. You just get measured, and you get clothes made for you.
Which intersects with the whole Bangladesh thing.
I was going to talk about it this week.
It's funny that you said that, because we were having the conversation coming here about this whole notion of above average, Mrs. Plus,
my
petite.
My favorite is woman.
Woman.
When you're
not a woman.
When you're thin, you're a girl. And when you're plus, you're a woman. That literally drives me crazy. And when you say, where's the plus? Section. Oh, you mean the woman section? And then you'll go into the basement.
Yeah.
You go into the basement, and you will literally be trying on clothes where you feel like you are a secret, or you feel like you're in somebody's dirty closet.
Yes.
And then you want me to shell out hundreds of dollars to try on clothes that look like I should be in a closet.
Yeah.
So it's obviously very frustrating, and I think a lot of, in terms of just activism and fashion activism and fat fashion activism, or curvy or plus, and it's, I'm using the word fat. I didn't always use it. Yeah. It's a process. And it's okay if you don't want to use it. It's okay if you are comfortable with saying curvy. It's okay if you're comfortable with using plus.
Mm-hmm.
Because, sometimes it's about your own personal journey and it grows.
Yeah.
But it can be frustrating. And with fat activism, people are writing open letters.
Mm.
They're putting themselves online. They're creating, Jill had curvy catwalk. There's full figure fashion week, because if we're talking local with Toronto Fashion Week, there's no plus designers.
Right.
Last fashion week 2012, I think it was fall. I can't recall. We had Ali Style. That was the first plus designer in Toronto Fashion Week. It just finished a few months ago, and there wasn't another plus designer.
So.
Well, don't forget, Ali Style was practically booed.
Yes.
Well, not booed, but laughed at, and
yes.
There was documentation on that. But we were talking about this whole notion of measuring.
Yes.
And, we thought, well, why couldn't we just go into a store and there's size 0 to whatever size, and then if there isn't a size, then there's measuring on the spot. But I guess that would be a utopious sort of a dream in that sense. But then again, you can get clothes made, but then, and there's, it's too big of a conversation, but there's economic issues around class. You can look very nice. I've got some people I know, mentors, people that are bigger, and they're wearing, a $500-$600 dress shirt that looks amazing, right? But the average person may not be able to drop the $1,800 that the first customer at Tony Plus dropped when she opened that store on one outfit.
Right.
I
feel like though there are local people who are dressmaking. Like, I got a very nice outfit made last year for $65. So that's why when you said,
you'll have to tell us.
I didn't know that person.
You'll have to share her.
I will. But I feel like there are people who are in our communities who are doing the work, especially if you will let's say barter something, not barter all of it. I think that but I think there's ways in which we can work locally, because even when you're talking about like a $70 outfit going to $140, I'm like, I could have made that work in my community, right? So I think those are things that we need to talk about as well. We're almost at the top of the hour. I wanted you to have a chance to talk about Bite Me.
So Bite Me, Body Image Film and Arts Festival. What is Bite Me? So Bite Me is a film fest. It's a 2-3 day event. Last time it was it was 3 days the last time we did it. That was in 2011. And the first time it was a 2 day event. And really what it is, it's a film festival that allows us to have deeper conversations about what bodies are, what they represent. So, I mean, two great examples. You know, we had this documentary called Teeth that talked about the socioeconomic consequences of having poor teeth. And so that was an interesting eye-opener for many in the audience. And we also had last time Faith Pennock's Weightless, which was all about these plus-size obese, according to BMI standards, you know, scuba divers who are shattering this myth that fat women, you know, fat people aren't movers, aren't doers, you know, aren't adventurous and all that jazz. So really what the festival is, it's an opportunity to come to sit around like-minded people or new people that want to join our like-mindedness and discuss bodies in a critical way through film. We also include a girls' empowerment media literacy leadership component to the festival, and that's usually the day before festival or the week before the festival, where we get girls together, you know, between 8 and 18, and we talk about media literacy. We talk about how they can become critical media citizens. We talk about ads and magazines as fun things, too, because it's fun to go through magazines. I like going through magazines. You know, there's a lot of research around aspiration, and women want to see great, beautiful-looking people. Whether or not you can afford it or not, or whether or not they even sometimes look like you, you want to see what they're wearing or see what they're going, or fantasy is great sometimes. But we also talk about how you can look at those magazines critically. So you're enjoying the fantasy, but you can close them and get back to reality and not have the fantasy creep over. This year, we're hoping to have the festival in September, along the same times as TIFF. So we're still investigating details of venue and whatnot. But it'll be interesting, and it'll be good, and yeah. So, bitemefilmfest.com.
That sounds like a really important festival, and one that I'd like to take my daughter to.
Ah!
Yeah. These issues are, I think, when you have a young woman that you're raising in this society, I mean... Yeah, it's a constant conversation in our household, and it's funny because I've never had fashion magazines. I've always avoided them just for for many, many political reasons. Mm-hmm. I've never had them in the home. Mm-hmm. She loves fashion though. She loves fashion, yes. And so I'm really interested in Bite Me, and
okay,
I want to take
you
her to that. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Oh, Adrian has something he'd like to say.
I was saying with the idea of like. Fat bodies being also active bodies or seeing in other kinds of ways. I think of, again, the gym. You see how small my life is, right? But it's...
I love you.
But the guy who runs a spin class, which I've never taken and will never take because that's just too much work, he's a fat guy. Like, he's got to be close to like 250. Like, he's legitimately big guy. But he's in very great shape because he's leading a spin class, right? Or if you look at, for example, football, which was, you know, you look at the offensive line, like, those are fat guys. Like, you know, like, they're athletic. So, like, to kind of dispel this myth, okay? I also happen to play capoeira, and when I used to play before, well, the best guy by far was this, again, this little fat guy. You would look at it, you wouldn't look and think, oh, this guy's an athlete. But he's spinning on his hand and spinning on his head and hopping back up on his hands, etc. So to dispel this notion that because somebody is big that they aren't therefore active or somehow lazy. I mean, there's so many examples if you don't just let prejudice and stereotypes guide your vision, in a sense.
If I can just plug a book, it's not my book, it's Dr. Linda Bacon's book, Health at Every Size, and it's this whole concept of exactly what you're saying, health at every size, and it really goes on to dispel, you know, this notion of who can lose weight, and, well, if you try hard, or, you know, if you're fat, you can't. It's a great resource, and of course, there's the Fat Studies reader, Sandra Solova, and Ruth Blum, sorry. Those two books, I mean, Fat Studies, Health at Every Size, and revolting bodies are definite starters, and they're actually not very hard academic reads. And Andrea Shaw as well, she also talks about, you know, the disobedient fat female body, mm-hmm. you know, and these are just great reads to start you on the conversation of thinking, well, oh, wow. So fat can actually be powerful, it can be sexual, it can be beauty, it can be subject, and not just object of doctors and prodding and pinching and airbrushing.
So if people want to get some more information about your work, where can they go?
They can go to fatinthecity.com, mm-hmm. and they can go to Facebook.
Yes.
And they can also find us on Twitter. Everything is under Fat in the City.
Great. Yeah.
And Bite Me Film Fest as well. You can go to that and Twitter. Who am I on Twitter? I am Fat in the City, Bite Me Film Fest, and Jill's Last Word. Yeah.
Awesome. Nice. Well, thank you both for coming in and,
thank you
and
very
having
much.
This
thank
really,
you for
really
having
illuminating
us.
And important conversation. I think you're definitely going to have to come back.
Please.
We didn't get into, I wanted to call out this one company, and Kemba is the one who actually.
ANF.
Well, no. Kevin's the one who told me about this one.
Whole Foods.
And their BMI. Yeah. I did not know about that. Yeah. So I'm really interested in knowing about any kind of actions around that. Because
We would love to come back.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll definitely have you back.
Definitely.
Thank
please.
You so very much.
There's so much to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so thanks to Kemba for bringing you all.
Thank you, Kemba.
Really
thank you very much.
Yeah. So you're listening to The Vibe Collective, and we're just wrapping up with Jill Andrews and Aisha Fairclough, and we're going to go to an ad. When we come back, DJ Griffin is going to play some music to move you.